Well, thank you. This has been a wonderful time of worship this morning, and I have not been in this sanctuary for many, many years, and it's good to be here again. You know how it is sometimes when you read things either on the internet or in a book somewhere, and then it comes back to you sometime later, and you cannot remember where in all the world you read that, but you want to use it. But you can't tell anybody where you read it. But I'm going to do that anyways. I read somewhere this phrase that in spite of our personal pain and struggles, when we cannot change our situation, we can change our perspective. And that came flying into my head when I was thinking of this story of Job. And I kept thinking, like, really? Really, can we change our perspective? Can we change and alter and transform how we think, how we look at things, how we view things? And so then as I was studying this ending story of Job, I was taken to some articles that I've been reading from James Finley. James Finley is a faculty member and a clinical psychologist at the Center for Action and Contemplation in New Mexico. And these words that he wrote in an article were, I think, fitting for our topic today. He talks about St. John of the Cross. And he says, St. John of the Cross encourages us not to lose heart when we are passing through our own hardships, but rather to have faith in knowing and trusting that no matter what might be happening, and no matter how painful it might be, God is sustaining us in ways that we cannot and do not need to understand. This love protects us from nothing, even as it unexplainably sustains us in all things. Access to this love is not limited by our finite ideas of what it is or what it should be. Rather, this love overwhelms our abilities to comprehend it. As it so unexplainably sustains us and continues to draw us into itself in all things that we might find in life. And so here we are today thinking about this story of Job and Jesus, our great high priest and intercessor. This morning we want to think about this story of Job, not necessarily everything that he went through, but just the story overall. Here was a person who experienced extreme hardship and struggle and pain, loss and deep sadness. And somehow through it all, it changed his perspective. Job sought after what he knew deep within himself to be right. He had this sacred space within himself that he knew God was. God is. And he wanted to be able to find that space in a deeper way and truly live a life. So I had to think, like, how did Job stay fixed on what was in his heart when he must have felt totally alone and betrayed, not just by God, but by all of his friends and everyone else? When all around him was falling apart and nobody understood a thing that was going on inside of him. This must have been extremely uncomfortable for Job, but also for all of his friends and family. And he must have felt totally alone. And yet his friends and family and Job himself fumbled through, speaking out of their own experiences and what they knew to be truth. We see at the end of this story that Job's religious friends were not equipped to help or to support him, or even to speak the truth about God. God declares this to them in this part of the passage, and yet he invites them to change their perspective and to be restored as Job prays for them. And I had to jot down while you were reading the passage this morning, Stephen, that one of the things that stuck out now as you were reading it was God was angry with them. And we know that God is slow to anger. So wow, if this got him angry with these guys, then we need to take this seriously, how we speak about God and how we support one another and be with one another. God was angry with them. Now, being restored in this story today that we're looking at is not about the external or the material things that Job was given towards the end of his life. Job being restored and encountering God is not about things, but about his willingness to see and hear and know God in all things. Even in his despair and his loss, to know God, to try to understand God in new ways. Job is teaching us to know God in all parts of life. To know God is with us as we cry out in anger, as we cry out in fear, as we weep or scream or blame, as we lose control and as we argue. God holds and God waits. Ultimately, Job illustrates that in spite of personal pain and hurt, when we cannot change our situation or what is happening around us, we can change our perspective. We see this lived out in the life of Jesus. His entire life and ministry reveals to us how God can use all of the things in our lives, which are inevitable, like suffering and death, to bring us to God. In all experiences of life, Jesus shows us that God can transform and God can restore. Jesus is our high priest, our intercessor. There is no one greater to minister on our behalf. Jesus has no category, no label, as did the former priests and spiritual leaders of the past. The writer of our Hebrew passage this morning is attempting to explain God working in new and different ways, in a way that they may understand. And so he uses Melchizedek, a mysterious character who appears in the Old Testament to Abram, and then is mentioned once in the Psalms, and then comes up here again in Hebrews, when the writer is trying to explain to Jesus in a way that could be understood to the people. I thought of an article that I was reading by pastor and author and theologian Rob Bell, and he explains it this way. Jesus is said to be a high priest in the order of Melchizedek, a priest of God Most High, who is a priest not on the basis of regulations or ancestry, but on the basis of the power of an indestructible life. This is saying to us today, don't be surprised when you meet people who have none of your religious background and they don't carry any of your baggage, and yet they clearly have a genuine connection with the divine God. This is normal. And it's healthy, and it's biblical. Don't get caught off guard when people just show up from outside of whatever system of or institution or religion or culture or doctrine or perspective that you have created, and they have something profound to give you. This is often how the story goes. Jesus came to teach a new way, a mysterious and different way, those whose perspectives could not or would not be changed ended up killing him. God transformed this tragedy into redemption for all. Because of God's love for us, we are each invited to live the way of Jesus. So then when I think of Job's story, I wonder, why do we try to explain away things that we don't understand or things that we don't feel comfortable with? I believe we need to learn better ways to learn how to be with one another in suffering and not have to have rehearsed answers or words of wisdom, perhaps simply by just being there, being present and holding the space as a sacred place for all to be. Being silent and listening, ready to do the most menial task to help, rather than trying to come up with clever anecdotes or advice about who or where, something about God that makes sense in the time, or attempting to make sense out of the circumstances, and especially not trying to figure out what the other person did to get them in this situation. Don't you just hate it when people do that? As a pastor, that's one of the hardest temptations, because we go into situations where people want answers. Why God? Why this? Why me? And if we're honest, we don't have those answers. If we're truly honest, I don't know. But I know God is love. And it's very hard to go into a situation, especially when you're being paid to go into those situations, and not have any answers. Pride sometimes can stumble, make us stumble and fall. Every one of us perceives life and circumstances through our own experiences, how we were raised, what we know, and what we've experienced in our life. We cannot see clearly for others because our vision is blurred by our own experience. And sometimes that's one of the hardest things to admit. Some writers say that we do not see with our eyes, but we see with what is behind our eyes. We view ourselves and others and the world through our past experiences, and therefore we can miss what God is doing, what God is doing in others and in the world around us and in ourselves. This, then, is being restored. When we can see with the eyes of Jesus, when we can come to a new and a deeper understanding of the mystery of God, our Creator, here we are restored and made new. In spite of our personal pain and struggles, when we cannot change our situation, we are invited to change our perspective. This, then, is being restored. God is at work in our hearts and our minds and our souls to restore us to seeing ourselves and the world through His eyes and understanding that we are not in control. I am not in control. I'm not in control of my life. I'm not in control of your life. And I am not in control of my children's lives. I'd like to think I am, but I am not. Coming to truly know this and releasing all control to God is one of the most difficult things that we can do as human beings. But it is necessary for being restored. And it is necessary when you encounter God. So what does this story of Job say to us about what it means to be human? What does it teach us about hope and love and pain and loss, support and forgiveness, and trying to be helpful, and compassion? How does Job's story help you and I to understand our own stories? Through all of this man's hardships, Job woke up to a greater understanding, a deeper knowing of who he understood God to be, and how God was working in his life. Now, did this revelation explain to him why the hardships and why the bad things happened? No, it didn't at all. It didn't explain anything to him. But Job knew in his heart and soul that he knew the God who created him in a deeper way, and the mystery of life being lived out with death and loss and love and joy all being a part of it. And that's something that we human beings will never understand totally. But there is a deep peace and a deep understanding and a deep invitation of knowing God that we are invited to help us along the way. And this part of life is so easy to forget about because it's so easy to get swallowed up by the stream or the river or the flood of life, everyday life, busying ourselves with working and fixing others and fixing the world around us. Fixing and fixing. Is this a strategy to keep us so busy that we miss the point? I wonder sometimes. Doing the inner work of our own souls is hard work, and it's so easy to set it aside and to get busy with life. I was brought to these words from Parker Palmer, an author that I love to read, when thinking about doing inner work for our own souls. He says that we fool ourselves into thinking it is so much easier to deal with the outside world, to spend our lives manipulating and organizing and scheduling all the material things, institutions and people, instead of dealing with our own inner life and soul. We like to talk about the outer world as if it was infinitely complex and very demanding, but really it's a cakewalk compared to the inner life and the inner work for our souls. And I think sometimes that is why we much prefer to deal with the outer world, because when we dive deep within, it can be a really scary place and there's stuff there that we don't want to admit or face up to. Our hearts and souls have the capacity to change our perspective. We are designed to know and to move in trust and the love of God. God created us this way. Knowing that in all circumstances, God is holding us, God is loving us, God is healing. Maybe not in the way that we want, but healing and transforming and restoring somehow, somewhere, someone, something. As we enter into the truth of this story, we take on new character as we understand and discover God in new and different ways. How God is working, because God is unrelenting and enduring and will not ever let us alone. As we look around, we can see God at work in individuals and in our own lives, if we only take the time to stop and observe and to listen. To listen. Stripping off, as Job did, metaphorically, all of the things that distract us from God, and simply sitting and contemplating and listening. Each of our stories are unique. Each of our encounters with God are unique. We are each created and invited to walk alongside one another in life and even entering death. Not dictating or confining others' experiences or encounters, but being present to God's love that is for all. We are all here for one purpose, for one mission. We're called to live out the love of God in all that we think and in all that we say and in all that we do. One mission, all of us. Does Job's story teach us about going deep within? Does Job's act of being contemplative, even in his anger and his frustration, and even in the midst of his visits from his friends, can his deliberate act of sitting and listening, sometimes in silence, sometimes in screaming and yelling and arguing, can this be an invitation to you and I to seek God with questions, with hearts outpouring, cries for help, shedding all that distracts us, and simply being with God, listening for God's voice? How would that look for you? How would you go about stripping off all the distractions and sitting with God? How can we deliberately seek out silence and call upon our great high priest and intercessor, Jesus, and learn to listen? May you each be blessed as you allow yourselves to be transformed and restored and in turn help others on the same path, saying these words: I once lived by rumors of you, God, but now I have it firsthand from my own eyes and ears. This week, pastor and scholar, writer, poet, guide, and fellow traveler, Eugene Peterson passed away. His writings have been a blessing to me and to many around the world. And so, in honor of him, I wanted to read what he has to say about the book of Job to end our talk this morning. I'm going to read from Conversations, The Message with the Translator, Eugene H. Peterson. And here is only some of what he says about Job. In our compassion, we don't like to see people suffer. And so our instincts are aimed at preventing and alleviating suffering. No doubt that is a good impulse. But if we really want to reach out to others who are suffering, we should be careful not to be like Job's friends. Not to do our helping with the presumption that we can fix things, or get rid of them, or make them better. We may look at our suffering friends and imagine how they could have better marriages or better behaved children, better mental and emotional health, But when we rush in to fix suffering, we need to keep in mind several things. First, no matter how insightful we may be, we don't really understand the full nature of our friends' problems. Second, our friends may not want our advice at all. Third, the ironic fact of the matter is that the more often than not, people do not suffer less when they are committed to following God, but more. When these people go through suffering, their lives are often transformed, deepened, marked with beauty and holiness in remarkable ways that could never have been anticipated before the suffering. So instead of continuing to focus on preventing suffering, which we simply won't be very successful at anyway, perhaps we should begin entering the suffering, participating insofar as we are able, entering the mystery and looking around for God. In other words, we need to quit feeling sorry for people who suffer and instead look up to them and learn from them. And if they will let us, join them in protest and prayer. Pity can be nearsighted and condescending. Shared suffering can be dignifying and life-changing. As we look at Job's suffering and praying and worshiping, we see that he has already blazed a trail of courage and integrity for us to follow. But sometimes it's hard to know just how to follow Job's lead. When we feel so all alone in our suffering, unsure of what God wants us to do, what we must realize during those times of darkness is that the God who appeared to Job in the whirlwind is calling out to you and I. Although God may not appear to us in a vision, he makes himself known to us in all the many ways that he describes to Job. From the macro to the micro, from the wonders of the galaxies to the little things that we take for granted. He is the creator God of the unfathomable universe around us. And he is also the creator of the universe inside of us. And so we gain hope, not from the darkness of our suffering, not from answers in books, but from the God who sees our suffering and shares our pain. Job saw evidence for God in the world around him, in the natural creation and in religious traditions. But he wanted something more. Job is an example that the something more he was looking for isn't to be found in another book or another counselor or another sermon or another speech. In short, what Job was looking for is to be found not in an answer, but only in God. Answers have their place, but when the chips are down and when the trouble comes and when doubt gnaws away at us, when anxiety threatens, then only God himself will do. He has the power to come to us through layer upon layer of defense, of rationalization, unbelief, rebellion, disobedience, and diversion. He can penetrate our suffering, our doubt, and our ignorance, making it possible for us to say, I admit, I once lived by rumors of you. Now I have it all firsthand, from my own eyes and my own ears. Job got no answers to his questions. He got no explanations for his suffering. He disregarded the vaunted wisdom of his friends. Though Job didn't get what he wanted, he did get what he needed. He got God. Job began to live in a personal response to the God who reveals. No secondhand religion, but rather a first-hand experience. Everyone in the story participated in the blessing of God's conclusion. The insensitive friends who thought they could explain God to a misguided sufferer, along with the courageous sufferer who insisted on getting past their words to an intimacy with God. Let's end with a prayer using the words of the late Eugene Peterson. Dear Lord, help me to see that you are sovereign over the circumstances of my life, even over suffering that seems impossible to understand. Help me to see that suffering as a sacrament. something that can be a means of grace, drawing me closer to you and you closer to me. Grant me the honesty to ask heartfelt questions. Grant me also the humility to realize that what I need isn't so much an answer, but an embrace. Embrace me, God, please. Lift me from the ash heap and gather me in your loving arms. Hold me close, wipe my tears, and make me whole. God, let it be with me, just as you say. Amen and amen.